Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
So early in high school or so, I went to this concert. It was this, you know, big kind of Christian rock band, and there was all. It was fantastic. It was in this place where there were residential houses, kind of a little bit around, and so there were a couple of times where there was noise ordinance things happening. Like it was a great time, right? It was one of those things where you know that you're just kind of teetering on the edge of being uncivil, and that the police may come to a Jesus concert. So that felt right. So anyway, then there comes this point at the concert where it's like my first official encounter and experience with what people call an altar call, right? Where you give your life to Jesus and you do this whole thing. And so they told everybody to turn around, okay, and to stay there. And then they were going to talk a little bit. And if you were making a commitment, you would turn around towards the stage, you would raise your hand, and you would make a commitment. Fantastic and fine, right? And so since then been a part of a lot of those, but they were using language that I had not ever heard in my life. Kind of like if you're visiting today and you hear us talking about annual conference and jurisdictional conference and council of bishops, like there's some church insider language. There are some times and places at which the church uses this different language to then kind of, like, it's just weird and different, and we don't understand. And so they were talking. I had been in church all of my life. Like, I was baptized. I went through confirmation. I did all the things, right? But then there was some language in there that was like, if you are sure, or if there is even an inkling of a doubt that you da-da-da-da-da, like, if you have any doubt whatsoever, if there's doubt, that, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh, you've said doubt now maybe 1,700 times? And my heart started to race, and I did one of the, like, let's speak our truth, okay? Is that, like, whenever anybody says, okay, everyone put your head down, right? Regardless of church setting or not, and then there is a question that you're kind of interested in, raise your hand if you're going to peek. Don't put your heads down, but just raise your hand if you're going to be a peeker, because I am, okay? Okay, so 3.5 of you said you were going to peek. So I would say at least, thank you, Sandra, there we go. There's a little bit of confession that's healthy today, right? So after about the 17th time I heard the word doubt, I did one of these, like, so pretend like I'm supposed to be here, right? And then doubt, I did one of these. And I stayed right about here, and I was like, you know, and I am sure that, like, if for some reason they saw me from the stage, they'd be like, what's wrong with that kid? He's, like, stuck on his, like, little conveyor belt. Like, it was a disaster, right? And so, like, I did one of those, and I just did what Cindy did when I asked the question. I did one of these kind of Methodist hand raises, and so I was here, and I kind of was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I want to hedge my bets, you know? And I think that what happens is that it was presented in such a way that essentially said that if you have absolutely any doubt and you've already done these faith commitment things, but you still have a doubt, then man, your faith isn't as strong as it should be. And I kind of had a problem with that, right? Because it kind of sounded like if you had gone through, if you had committed to following Jesus, if you had committed to doing these things, then life after that would be a living Disney movie, right? And not where the ominous music comes in, but where the bluebirds fly on your shoulder. And I thought, well, hold on. I've done all these things, but it didn't lead to cherubim, you know, flying around me and singing and woodland creatures just landing on my, you know, it didn't happen. And so what does that mean? And so as we talk about this, as we talk about what it is to live a life out loud, as we've been kind of following Paul's journey along the way, as we've been talking about his missionary journeys from here to there and things like that, we come to this second missionary journey. So we're talking about how we can live our lives out loud as the most faithful Christians that we can be, as the most faithful Jesus followers that we can be. And let me tell you, because I've already spilled coffee, I've knocked stuff over, Ben almost, you know, tore down the whole stage, like, the reality is that we are real people living real lives. That means that we're probably somewhere along there, doubt is going to creep in. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we don't have enough faith, but it just means that we are moving on to what John Wesley would say, that we are moving on to being made perfect, that we are still in this process of sanctification. And so today, we're going to kind of focus, I'm going to go through the map really quickly today for Paul's second missionary journey. So Nathan, if you could just pull up that next slide. Okay, so if you kind of start over here in Syria Antioch, that's kind of his home base. So last time, he went from Syria Antioch to Cyprus and kind of did a whole kind of loop back. And so he's going now the opposite way, then to Tarsus, where he was born, to Derbe, to Lystra, kind of all up in there. And if you look at that very last, well, the last stop before we go to Philippi, we're going to kind of spend some time there today, just to orient you to where Paul has gone and done. Last year, we talked about how he had over 1,580 miles or so on that first missionary journey. This second one is pretty significant as well. And so as we look at that, though, he meets two people in these journeys that I kind of want to focus our time on today really quickly. The first, her name is Lydia. This is the one that Jillian read the scripture for. Lydia was a small business owner who was a fabric, who dyed purple fabric. And the significance of that is that purple represented the color of royalty, and it was really expensive to make this kind of fabric. So if she was there, she was probably a successful entrepreneur who was a female, which was probably, you know, not the norm at the time. And they came down to the riverbank, it said, that because if you couldn't have a large enough community to have a temple, what would happen is that on the Sabbath, you would come down to the river. So we have a lot of songs, we have a lot of spirituals, we have a lot of fantastic music and like bluegrass stuff about going down to the river, right? And it's because there was this tradition that there would be this meeting place around the river where you would come and pray and read the Torah and do the things that you would do in temple, but because you didn't have one, that's where you would do it. And so Paul decided, well, let's just go there just on the chance that something would happen. And so there were these women there, one was Lydia, and Lydia came and she heard the message. And then it says in this really kind of important way right there, and then she and her household were baptized. So there was this message that demanded a response, and not only she, but her whole household was baptized. And then she extended, right immediately after that, she extended hospitality to Paul and his team and said, no, come and stay with me, please, please, please. And then there was this thing that was offered afterwards, and she helped support the ministry, and it was great and wonderful. And then a little bit later, they go on to their next stop, their next destination. And what had happened was that after this had happened, there was kind of some healing happened. And there was this girl who was possessed, and they exorcised this demon. And the problem was that she was like a fortune teller that then became a follower of Jesus. And she was a slave girl. And so when this profit-making person is no longer profitable anymore, what do you think was the response? Joy and celebration when you see someone as just a means for profit? She was an outcast, right? They were pretty ticked at Paul, too. And so they go and they tell their authorities that this guy is disturbing the peace, and so they throw him in jail, and then all of a sudden there's this opportunity for Paul to leave and get out. There's this earthquake, and he throws open the doors, and Paul and his team just sit there, and they wait, and the jailer thinks, man, I'm going to have to literally fall on my sword because I've lost my prisoners, and they're still there. And so this loving action then allows and opens up this jailer to what God might be doing in him. And in a similar way, it says then, you know, once he and his family were baptized, Paul was able to reconcile. And then the authorities came. They said, they're Roman citizens. Paul's a Roman citizen. We got to let him out. And so Paul goes on his way, but after making another disciple. And so one of the things that kind of struck me about just this passage in Acts chapter 16 is that we have two instances where there are two people that couldn't be further apart, right? Rich woman who is an entrepreneur and a jailer having a kind of, you know, an important but a government job, who's a male, Roman citizen, probably not a Roman citizen. Right? So they are kind of on two ends of the spectrum, and it's yet the same kind of message. The same God has this reconciling message that brings them together and breathes into them new life. I think sometimes we forget the perspective that our God is the God of big church, like Linda talked about God is the God of all of creation. And so what that good news is, if it's good news for all of creation, it's good news for me and for you and for everyone that we encounter. And so when they are baptized, something powerful starts to happen. And so, you know, when you think about even just jumping into a pool, there's a little bit of anxiety, especially if it's a little bit chilly, that when you stand at the edge of the pool and look in, there's a little bit of unknown, right? How cold is it really going to be? What's going to happen? And things like that. And I think that for Lydia and for the jailer, sometimes this baptism, the sacrament of the church, that God is here in a new and special way, there's this anxiety, a doubt. But because, you know, when we come to that on our own, when we come to the baptismal waters, we're still thinking that we have to generate our own hope. And that hope that has to continually be regenerated time after time. There's this burden that if I'm going to be happy, I need to make it that way. But then there is this time and moment when we come into the water. And I think I've mentioned a couple of people. I think that into the water and thinking about like full immersion baptism, right, about coming down. Can you go to that next picture, Nathan? Here's a buddy of mine. His name is Andy. And we were doing a baptism in the Potomac. So he should have been holding his nose, but he wasn't. But we were doing this baptism with my wife, Katie, there. And it was this wonderful, powerful experience. And so about a second and a half after that picture was taken, he was fully down. And then we bring him up, and you know, there was this celebration, and the first thing that he said was, I didn't know how long you guys were going to leave me down there, which is awesome, right? Because sometimes there's this uncertainty, because when we're down in the water, time is different. If we open our eyes, everything looks different. And if you were to try to listen to what is going on up above, you're not going to hear it. How many of you are in that place right now? How many of our churches are? We talk about how there's debate and things like that. I think that that's where we, the church in Methodism, but we, the church in the U.S. kind of are, is that we're trying to take this next faithful step, but at the same time, we realize that we don't know how long we're going to be under these baptismal waters. We know that it's good. We know that we need to. We know that all of these things are happening, that God is moving and acting in powerful ways, but at the same time, man, how long are we going to have to be there? The Israelites, God's people, said this when they were led out of Egypt, right? There's a moment at which they are kind of in the spiritual, when they're kind of in those baptismal waters where they looked to Moses and said, it would have been better if we were back in Egypt as slaves. At least we knew what kind of stuff we were dealing with there. But when we're in those transition times, when we're in those places where we are not quite alive and not quite dead, it is hard and scary and difficult. But then when Andy came out of that water, he gave my wife, Katie, a big hug, and he was so excited because we literally are then raised to new life. And that kind of, you know, that imagery about that kind of dying to ourselves and raising up in new life, then we had this new perspective that's not only this kind of there's a community around us thing, but also that burden that before we stepped into those waters where it's I have to generate my own hope. Now, all of a sudden, we are baptized into this thing where it says that now your hope can come from that source that will never run out. Now your hope and joy and grace and love and peace and all of that goodness is generated by something that won't run out. And it's not dependent on you. It's not dependent on you having a good day or you feeling like a good person, but it's always going to be there. And so for us today, church, for us today, sometimes we feel like, man, I don't know how long I'm going to stay in the water of my baptism, but it feels sometimes even like I am about to drown. But God is working, and God is moving. And so today, our kind of so what question, our remembrance question is, remember your baptism. And if you haven't been baptized, let's talk about it. But the idea is that when we are baptized into that new life, it's not some hope for a future thing. It's a present reality that we can experience here and now. It's a present reality that we can come and taste and see, but it's also a present reality that we have to come back to daily, else we forget about it, where that water becomes something of a burden rather than a blessing, when we forget about the way in which it washes us clean and it just becomes a hassle. Friends, our hope comes from the everlasting gift of that living water. And so today we see that Lydia encountered that through our scripture. If you keep reading, you see that jailer seeing that in that. And because of that gift of grace, they come and take that next step. And so in just a second, we're gonna step down and we're going to transition into a time of communion where we will then be able to not only remember our baptism, but taste and see a little glimpse of what God has in store. And